welcome to Keeping Pace with Cyberspace. I'm your host, Lucas Ashbaugh, and this week we're going to be talking about the faulty Hawaiian missile alert and trust as an asset. Unless you live under a rock, you're aware that a false alert streamed across TVs and text alerts went out to the entire state of Hawaii that read, in all caps, "Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill." And as we all also know by now, it took a full 38 minutes for a correction to be sent out. So beyond the trauma that Hawaiians experienced last week, the fallout of this event and the conditions surrounding it point to a few key concepts within cyberspace that we can pick apart. In cyberspace, trust is an asset, or more accurately, trust is a vulnerable asset. In traditional domains, this is important, but it's easy to control. For example, allies have to build mutual trust and continually earn trust through possibly joint military operations or economic development, or even among individuals at the workplace, maybe. Trust leads to employees to reciprocate in assisting each other in achieving goals. The point here is that an organization or a person has to make a conscious choice to break someone else's trust in a traditional sense, and they usually very clearly are responsible for making that choice. In cyberspace, people and organizations don't have a monopoly on trust. As many of you have probably heard the phrase, trust no one online, don't trust anyone, right? If the Hawaiian alert system went off again, everyone would most likely just run and check their computers and see, is this real or is this another faulty alert? And when there isn't that much time, say, when a real missile is coming, that's really dangerous. On a more individual level, not to sound too paranoid here, but you can never fully trust the emails you receive. It's now commonplace for criminals or foreign governments to gather information on an individual's social network, their professional network, and the organization they work at, and to tailor an email so it looks benign and it looks not out of place and to send it to someone. These are called phishing emails, right? And they usually contain some sort of malware or other payload. Now, before I go further, I just want to introduce this really key term here, critical infrastructure. As it implies, this refers to absolutely essential infrastructure for a country's sustained well-being. Most certainly, this always includes energy, health infrastructure, financial, emergency infrastructure. And I should clarify, different governments often pick different things to categorize as critical infrastructure. But that being said, health, energy, financial, emergency, and a few other categories almost always fall under that just because of their very nature. And as you probably know, the Hawaiian missile alert system, or I guess you could just say the emergency alert system in Hawaii, is critical infrastructure. While I've made it clear before that protecting all devices in cyberspace is all but impossible, protecting critical infrastructure is more doable, and it's notably more important. And when I say protect, you should all understand what that means. Protection doesn't mean always just thwarting rival countries or keeping criminals at bay. A lot of times it means having backups for data in case there's a fire or natural disaster, or having a plan for if something unintentionally happens, like a false alarm, per se. In the Hawaiian alarm case, no one had planned for a false alarm at all. While there was automated options for a test and the real thing, there were no automated options for a oops, didn't mean to scenario. Hawaii's Emergency Response Authority had to manually whip up a correction and send that message to everyone, hence why it took a full 38 minutes, along with other reasons. All right, so put on your tinfoil hats here, because the world's critical infrastructure is vulnerable. It's just globally understood. It's currently the one thing that keeps many policymakers up at night. They're constantly passing bills, signing agreements, and trying to fix this problem in general. But all of that takes time, and we're not there yet. And while I'm not saying this critical infrastructure, like regional alarm systems, are so vulnerable that just any prankster can throw up a random message about, I don't know, zombie apocalypses. But actually, that's exactly what I'm saying. In Montana, a prankster sent out an alarm that, quote, dead bodies are rising from their grave. And in another instance, someone randomly triggers Dallas's emergency alert horns, which are blaringly loud. In another instance, earlier this year, U.S. military personnel on the Korean Peninsula received an alert to evacuate. And also, right after the Hawaii incident, Japan also released a false alarm about a North Korean missile. Keep in mind that none of these incidents that I have mentioned have been beyond pranksters or employees making mistakes. So just think about what other countries are capable of doing to each other when they have real resources to achieve this stuff. Let me wrangle this back in. The point here is that, one, critical infrastructure is vulnerable, and two, trust in critical infrastructure is vulnerable. And in most cases, both of these assets need to be protected for critical infrastructure to function properly. You don't need to completely hose and bring down an international bank to its crippling demise. You just have to sow doubt that the accounts have been tampered with and people go crazy and the bank will be inundated. You don't have to shut down a hospital's patient record system. But if people suspect you've altered data pertaining to pre-existing conditions and allergies, well, all of the records pertaining to that are now useless because people don't trust them. You don't need to rig an election to cause chaos. You just need to make it clear enough that you tried and that you probably could if you wanted to. And in some cases, like the last one there, we've learned that the asset of trust is more important than the tangible assets themselves. If there had been clear tampering with election results, the whole country would unite against Russia as a common national security enemy. But instead, without tangible tampering, without actually seeing numbers altered, it's turned into this huge partisan debate. Now, of course, information campaigns and influence campaigns led by Russia is a whole different and related story that muckies up that last example, but the concept is clear. If someone hijacks your email account and emails your friends, but all of those emails contain viruses, your friends aren't going to trust your future emails like they used to. They're just not going to. So I've made it clear that this is a problem governments are really worried about. So what are they trying to do to fix this? First off, they're agreeing to voluntary norms not to attack critical infrastructure or the emergency response teams that are in charge of protecting those. These are usually called computer emergency response teams, or short CERTs. So far, this has been done through the UN, although granting the UN additional authority over cyberspace emboldens a different body of upsetting issues, but that'll be for a different time. They've also pursued some basic confidence-building measures. We've seen information sharing over serious threats and direct communication channels in case there's a serious misunderstanding for people to try to clear things up. Yet, things are still really up in the air. As unlikely as it is that North Korea would launch a giant cyber attack against the U.S., especially since the administration this week said that they would respond possibly with a nuclear warhead, do we really trust North Korea to follow these norms? They already breached these norms with the WannaCry attack virus that hit hospitals and logistics lines, and the United States has also conducted some pretty aggressive operations in the past, notably the Stuxnet attack against the Iranian Natanz nuclear facility, and Obama had an even more aggressive plan in his back pocket in case the nuclear deal with Iran failed. Russia has previously infiltrated the U.S. power grid and targeted Ukrainian power grids in the past. well, I'll stop my laundry list, but my point being that with all of these events in our recent history, you've got to wonder how well these voluntary norms will actually hold up. So in recap, the big things we covered here today, trust is an asset, and it is a vulnerable asset, one that is sometimes more important than the physical assets themselves. Two, critical infrastructure is also vulnerable and will continue to be so for quite some time. And finally, three, governments are working on reaching mutual understandings to bridge these issues, but progress is slow and complicated. So just a quick Ashbaugh anecdote here. I've been avoiding this one for a while, but I think it's worth a discussion. For anyone that's seen any of the videos for these podcasts, I am confined to a very small room where I live with a loud environment. And my biggest issue, as you might have heard in my first few episodes, is echo. So if you're watching me now, you can see that I am sitting under a blanket like a Halloween costume in a little pillow fort that I've made. And my entire room has my mattress flipped up, windows covered with towels. It's a pretty interesting sight, but it gets the job done and it makes getting the show out to all of you doable, so it's worth it. All right. Thanks for tuning in. This has been our fourth official episode. You can follow Keeping Pace with Cyberspace on Twitter at KPW Cyberspace, and you can follow us on Facebook by searching Keeping Pace with Cyberspace. Additionally, we are officially on the iStore and the Google Play Store and Stitcher this week, so you can access the shows using your favorite apps. Thanks for listening, and catch you all next week.